Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. So no big surprise at all, I like to talk a lot. And now I can share some of the incredible people who crossed my path and the interesting conversations that we have. The Private Practice Secrets podcast is all about harnessing and sharing this collective business know-how, the experience, and the wisdom. My guests are amazing. They're bold, they're brave, and they're honest. There are laughs, and surprisingly, there's often talk of wine. We think you're really going to enjoy these unplugged private practice chats. So come on in, pull up a chair, let's get the conversation started. Welcome, Fran Nicholson, Director of Sensational Kids here in Melbourne. And thank you up front for your tenacity and persistence, because this must be fourth date, our third trial, our ninth change of time, and there's been sick children involved, there's been a lack of Skype involved, there's been major telecommunication fails, but we're here, so welcome.
Thank you.
Done it. So my first curiosity is back to the moment when you kind of went into private practice. Can you even remember?
Very vaguely. It seemed like a long time ago now. So I was, I'm actually not pediatric, or wasn't initially pediatric focused. I was an adult therapist and worked very acute and very rehab kind of focused treatment. And a friend of mine opened up a private practice, Sensational Kids, back in 2007, and he called me up to come and have a look at it, which I did. And then he asked me to join the team, and I said, are you crazy? Not a pediatric therapist. And he said, well, I'll train you. So that's what I decided to do. And then about
I wonder what he was thinking around that.
About 6 months later, I ended up buying into the business, and then I ended up buying him out of the business. So I've been running Sensational Kids on my own since it was 2012 when I finally kind of got my hands on it all for myself. So that's how I am here, where I am now.
Good story. Good story. I'd lost track of the timelines because I guess for a while there, let's be blunt, we were in competition, the business I had. In competition, I didn't really think of it as like that, but you were the kind of the in the hood and an alternative provider. I don't get particularly competitive. And interestingly enough, your timeframes are really similar to ours, because I was kind of handing over the keys in 2012 and you were kind of rubbing your hands together with, it's all mine.
Very true.
So you've got a lot going on. You've got a lot going on at Sensational Kids. Who's in your team at the moment? What's happening?
What are we doing? So we've got, I guess, the stock standard speech, OT and psychology. Maybe it's not stock standard. Maybe I just perceive it that way, but we've always had them. And so for me, it's always been that our team is not complete unless we have speech, OT and psychology. And I've always had an amazing admin team who are very consistent, and they're my right-hand men, really, or ladies, as it turns out. And then we've just started, about a year ago, we took on a dietitian because we were getting so many kids through for feeding, and then more recently, a music therapist, again, because we had a program we ran last year with her and she was amazing. So we decided to continue music therapy. So we've got quite a few disciplines on board at the moment. So
back to 2007, I am reasonably confident in saying that Sensational Kids would have been one of the first private operators that had the whole team or had that kind of team.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the foundation, or I guess the theory behind it when it first started, was one of the original owners, she had a child with developmental differences, and so she actually went over to the United States, where there was a model that was being used over there that wasn't being used here, or at least that we weren't aware of, and it was DIR floor time, and that really fit well with her. She was a psychologist, and she came back and she said, I want to start a business with DIR full-time. And at that time in the States, most of the registered practitioners with full-time were actually psychologists, believe it or not. So it's a little bit different here. They tend to mostly be OT and speechies. So they started a practice with the three disciplines. So I believe, again, I'm not sure about the timeline, but I believe about a year or 18 months after they opened Sensational Kids and had been running with those three practices, those three disciplines, the DSS funding, the AMAZE funding started. And it just turned out that speech, OT and psychology were also supported through that funding. So it kind of tied in really nicely and I think really fit with what the original owners had planned for. And, yeah, as I said, my team's not complete without all three disciplines. I absolutely love that we've got so many different perspectives and so many, I guess, different areas that we all come from and that we can kind of add to the team dynamic. So,
yeah. Yeah, well done, well done. So I guess now it's a bit more of a thing to have kind of different professionals under the roof, but I often ask the question with the people I speak to about, it's sort of the so what factor. Some people know about me and my so what factor. How do you actually make it work? How do you actually kind of team around the child? Because I hear stories from parents' point of views that businesses have all these people, but they work on different days and they don't talk and they don't seem to share a file and they never seem to know what the other one is doing. How do you guys kind of manage that bit?
We've got formal ways of managing it. So we have team meetings and we actually have kind of set times in people's timetables where they catch up with each other. And we do it really well informally. And I think that's because it was something that we just started really early on. I remember when I first started here as a practitioner back in 2007, that was one of the things I absolutely loved, was that we would all come together, just before lunch or at the end of the day, and we would have a really spontaneous debrief of the day. And we would, pick a particular case to talk about. And we still do that. It's something that I've really always really fostered. When I hire people, that's like almost one of the first things that comes out of my mouth, is that we work as a team and we communicate as a team and that we use every opportunity we can to catch up. And, yeah, look, there is the reality that some of our guys are here 1-2 days a week, some of them are here full time, and that there's always going to be that challenge with connecting. But it's because of that spontaneity and that really great, as soon as you walk into our staff office, you just kind of feel it, and someone can walk in and say, that was the worst session I've ever had. I don't know where to go from here. And everyone turns around and they just start talking. And so it's almost like everyone on the team is aware of people that aren't even on their caseload. I know I don't see clients anymore, but I'm still aware of who they are and what their goals are and what challenges we're facing because of those discussions that we have in that environment. Yeah.
And you're also coordinating teams across two centres.
Yes.
So I'd love an update. I know we spoke about it briefly the other week, but you've got two really big centres. Like, they're not just rooms at the paediatricians. You've got two standalone kind of buildings going. How Yes. is that looking, and how do you kind of keep the team heading in the right direction?
Look, I'm over there. I split my time between both sites. I probably spend 2/3 of my time at Ormond, and that's largely because I've got all my paperwork here. That's probably more than any other reason, and I like to be able to reach up and grab my files when I need them. But I think at the end of the day, it's about the team I've got. I hire very, very carefully. I've had lots of experience with hiring, unfortunately. As much as I'd like to say I've only ever interviewed 30 people, that's not the case. But I hire people who are very competent and very capable and not necessarily entirely independent or autonomous. I like people who obviously work as part of a team, but people who take initiative. And for that reason, I'm able to actually leave Moonee Ponds, 3 days a week and know that it's actually going to run. Aside from all of our systems and processes, I've got people there that I trust and I've got people that are really good at communicating. So I know that if I leave something for them to do or if they notice a problem or an issue, that they're onto it and they either communicate back to me when it's been resolved or they come and say, Fran, there's an issue. Yeah, can you take a look at this for me? So I can do that while I'm driving in the car on the way home. I can line up people to do it for me. But yeah, I think it's all about the people you have around you. And over years of, I guess, working in a business, it's about recognizing people's strengths and knowing how they can help you, but also what satisfaction they get out of their work. And for a lot of people, it's not just doing their job. You know, they're kind of, you know, I guess the list of tasks that they're expected to do, but they do actually get some enjoyment out of doing extra things and different things might come up. And they get satisfaction out of solving problems, I think, as well, and knowing that they've helped the team or the practice in doing that. So
I'm hearing that you've got great people, but you're also a pretty good delegator as well. And when you delegate, you don't abdicate, you just push it down and kind of run surveillance over it. And
Exactly. That takes
a bit of practice. But I suspect you have also got a whole lot of systems and policies and procedures in place, because that is the secret to growing your business or scaling your business, as I see it and as I set out to do. And so to have two sites, three sites, four sites, five sites, you need to have this core, this is the way we do things team.
Yes.
And for people to know that they've got a reference back to that and comply to that and literally sign off on it. Mm-hmm. And then that does free you as the manager to be creative and entrepreneurial and dreaming up the next big dream and all the rest of it. Is that the case? Are you
pretty... Definitely. I think at the core of it, we have our systems and our processes that are in place, and everyone knows, I guess, what steps are required to be able to complete tasks or what's required to be able to communicate something between team members. But we also have a kind of our core values as a practice, as a company. And there's, as you know, there's a lot of grey in healthcare. We're working with not only the child, but we're working with the parents, the grandparents, the nannies, the schools, and there is so much variability because we're working with people. And what I like about, I guess, our company values is that although there are systems and processes in place, we know that we have to vary them sometimes because we're working with people. So we have families who desperately need care that can't afford to come. And so our usual process of, well, we collect payment for a service that's been provided needs to be looked at because we need this family to attend. So what's really lovely is that our company values allow that flexibility. So, you know, where we've got, I guess, an understanding that we have a responsibility to be socially accountable, that there are some families who would never be able to access our service or that try their absolute utmost to attend but just financial reasons, I guess, cut them off at the knees, then our company values allow us to be able to be flexible because we want to be able to allow them to come and access the treatment that they need. Mm. Even though our systems and processes, if we were to look at them very strictly, we would say, well, you can't afford to come, so you can't attend. So what that does is it allows our team to make decisions and to do it quite autonomously. And so I guess it's providing or equipping the team with that knowledge that they're actually allowed to make those autonomous decisions, or they've got the flexibility to do that without me actually having to physically be there or to sign off on all of them. And so they make these calls and then they just report back to me and say, look, this is what we've done and this is my reasoning behind it. And so that's, you know, we don't always get it right, but for the most part, they do an amazing job. So yeah, so I think it's a bit of a mixture of a few different things that help it work.
Mm. The equity piece is challenging, particularly when you're a private practitioner, and even more so when you've perhaps worked in the public sector, in a government, community health, something like that. And the charging for services and hearing that families can't afford it is difficult, and I congratulate you on having a policy and having some flex around that to support some of those families. And I guess I'm using this as a bit of a lever into the NDIS question. I'm sitting with the hope that will change a little bit and that families will have access to different choices and different decisions and different amounts of money and different purchasing power. What are your thoughts on the NDIS?
I think it's amazing. I'm a bit of a socialist. so, So I think it's amazing. I think it's something that I guess we've been so handcuffed, or, you know, I say we, but as a service provider, we want to be able to provide services to families. And then we have them coming through the door and they say, I've got 5 CDM sessions up my sleeve. What can you do with that? And, you know, the answer in short is really not very much. And I think they know that. We know that. You think about our families with developmental delays, our little kids who just require so much therapy and they just can't afford it. So I absolutely love it. I think the concept is incredible. I think the fact that they've rolled this out is amazing. And as anticipated, there's been teething issues. But for something that is this huge, I mean, it's just incredible. I'm very excited. I think we're seeing families through here now. We've got a few NDIS participants, even though we're not in a rollout zone, who have never been able to access treatment. So it's really, yeah, I'm very excited by it.
Yeah, me too. I've got goosebumps as you said that. And I hear a little bit around the countryside that, well, we don't, from service providers, we don't need to apply. We're not in a rollout area yet or a full-scale, full service. And I'm going, yeah, but if you can, the NDIS doesn't always let you, but families are getting packages of money and not having the services of their choice in their neighbourhood, and families are travelling. So there's a cohort of participants that are looking for those destination centres. Mm. And, yeah, we'll talk about some of your unique pieces in a bit, and that they are happy to travel. So I'm encouraging people to apply as soon as the gates open, because it could be that they have clients that aren't necessarily local.
Yes, exactly. We've had families travelling. We've got one family who's moved down from Canberra because they couldn't get the services they needed. So they've got the funding even though they're not living in a rollout zone in Victoria. We've had a family move over from Adelaide with the same thing. We have people coming from Bendigo and Ballarat driving down for services because they can't access the services where they are, either because they're not available or because there's a wait list. So, yeah, it is possible, and I think as more and more people get registered, I think the demand's just going to really, you know, exceed the ability to provide the service. So I think the more you know about it, the less confusion there is for clients, which I think is really important. And, yeah, I think I agree with you. I think the earlier you can register, the better.
Yeah. So your business is a bit of a destination business in that people recommend you for certain reasons and people travel to see you. What is unique about Sensational Kids?
I think it's the way that we communicate, and I think you touched on it before when you said there are some services that are available where they might offer the same disciplines, but I think time and time again the feedback we're getting from our clients is, and GPs, all our referrers, is that it's the way that we communicate with all of the people involved in the child's care. You know, we really understand the way that the other disciplines work. We don't work in isolation. If a child comes in for occupational therapy, we're aware of all of the areas of OT. The OT is also aware of mental health concerns. They're also aware of potential communication, language, social issues that the child may have. And the ability to be able to move the clients really fluidly between the disciplines, and so they can access the services that they need in that point in time, I think is really, I believe is really unique. I think we do it really well. I think more and more people are doing it, but I think that we've got the experience and we do it really well. And I think as well, just, I guess the thing that we're always kind of looking to improve how we do things, which I know a lot of businesses do, but we do that in consultation with our clients, and we don't, I guess, assume what people want or need. We do it, we're very consultative, and so the things that we offer are things that our clients are asking for. So that's, I guess, that's possibly unique as well in this space.
Yeah. I anticipate that more and more service providers will be running surveys and will be running consulting groups. And I'm working with an organisation at the moment that actually has parents on their committee as such, and has a consulting group to the board and a consulting group to the head of clinical services. And that's really cool.
It's really amazing.
And that's the way that I guess you build from the consumer participant up, products and services that are relevant and needed. And I think sometimes we get a bit attached to what we want to provide and then wonder why people don't want it. Mm-hmm. Whereas in fact, I think there's going to be a shift, NDIS driven,
yes,
smart business. Build what they want.
Yes, exactly right. Not what you think they want.
Yeah. Right. Your organisation, your business is also known for the SES, SOS and the feeding and support around that. What does that part of the business look like nowadays?
So we're running individual sessions and we're just starting to coordinate group sessions as well. So we have about six of our clinicians, so SOS trained. So I guess the way that it works is we get a lot of children in either who are coming in for other things, whose family members identify that they're having very restricted or fussy eating, and then we can refer them on to an SOS trained clinician. They may already be with a trained clinician, so in which case that clinician would generally have a look at their feeding as well. And we've also got kind of the psychology element as well around that, because SOS is, it's a transdisciplinary approach as well, and the idea is that any, for whatever reason, the child is having difficulty, whether it be motor planning, sensory based, anxiety or psychologically based, that we can actually address all of those concerns regardless of what discipline is actually seeing them. So it's in that really that true transdisciplinary kind of model. So with the groups, we're looking to make small groups of children so that they can actually be part of a small group with their peers and have a little feeding group that way, which we're pretty excited about. There's, we're always kind of thinking of little group ideas for some of our kids. We're very fluid and flexible with our groups because we work really hard to match the children according to their age and their capacity and also their kind of, not necessarily their personality, but their goals and that kind of thing. So we're kind of keen to see how a feeding group will look once it's actually started. But they're kind of, that's kind of part of all of our group programs. Like, we have a whole lot of different kind of social skills groups that we run term basis, and we run a lot of dyads, which are our little two kids with one therapist, and they're really successful. Really love them. We do a lot of spontaneous dyads as well because of the space we have. We have the capacity for often children to be in the same space together doing therapy, and then we've got that spontaneous exchange, which the parents absolutely love as well. So, yeah.
Nice. So you're a bit of an ideas person, fair to say. What does your week look like? How do you get the kind of management, motherhood, mentor, entrepreneur, how do you get all that stuff kind of spinning and landing in the right spots?
Doesn't always land in the right spots, very sadly. No, look, I think it's just, I guess it's just being organized and, again, delegating. So I've got people in my team who have certain jobs that they do that they've expressed interest in and they run. So I've got someone who does all of my student coordination and she's amazing and she gets all of our students through the door and gets them hooked up with a supervisor. And then I've got my team leaders in each of the teams as well who kind of there to support me in my role so that I'm able to kind of support the whole team. So they come in and they provide feedback on how everyone's going, and I've got that in my admin team as well on both sides. So I think it's, again, having really good people around you that you know are doing certain jobs. Two is having a diary. You saw my diary the last time we caught up.
I did giggle. You could hold it up now, but no one will be able to see it.
It's orange and it's very thick. And I'm
old school, but that's up to you.
Very old school. I have tried electronic devices and I find I'm just not as good at putting things in. I'm one of those people that actually likes crossing things out. So it works for me. And then, yeah, my boys and my husband. My husband works full time and my boys are just amazing. They do very well with a very part-time mum. So, yeah, and I've got my parents as well who are wonderful, and I had various different people kind of helping out, doing school pickups and goodness knows what else, taking kids to swimming lessons and things. So I think, again, it's about kind of having people around you to help out. And I think for me it's just about trying to keep things kind of organized in my head as much as possible, even though I probably have about 5,000 thoughts a day.
Yep, all open loop thoughts.
Yeah. So So, yeah, I think it's, for me, it's about writing things down. I had a little bit of a giggle about that last time as well, making sure it's in my diary. Otherwise, I wake up in a panic and think, have I done that? Or will I forget to do it?
What's that idea? Yeah, I'm a journaler and writer as well, but I have moved some aspects of it to tech, which makes it, I guess, differently portable.
You're much better at it than I am. But you have given me some great suggestions, and I've read all of your articles in your magazine, your e-magazine, which is very impressive. So, yes, I'm getting there. I really am. I'm trying, Kathy.
I know you are. And to pat you on the back, you've used practice management software for years.
Yes.
And as it turns out, we use the same one we use Frontdesk. And how businesses run and deliver services without that, we're both shaking our heads here if you're listening, is mind-boggling, because that is a game changer. And that really gets you thinking like a boss, because it drives your systematic thinking on policies and procedures, and it drives customer service, and it drives accountability and financial fluency and the reports and all the rest of it. So there you are. You have got, you know, plenty of your tech lined up.
I use email.
It's email.
I have an iPhone.
All good stuff. But I don't know the answer to this question. That's why I should ask it. You've done some management training. You've invested in yourself as a business owner and a manager along the way in different ways.
Yeah, look, a lot of it I've actually done on my own. So I've done some online training. There's a lot of free education through some pretty amazing universities in America. So my husband got me onto that because he does a lot of that kind of thing as well. And a lot of the other courses, I guess the ones that have been in Melbourne, I just found I haven't connected with and felt that it was as relevant, or felt that maybe I couldn't get as much from it as what other participants could, or it was a time thing, and as in just finding the time to be able to commit myself fully to it, which is something that I try to do with everything in my life. So the way that I found my way around that was I found online courses. I do loads and loads of reading. I listen to podcasts. I look at a lot of video blogs. And I've attended seminars, like, you know, kind of half-day, full-day seminars here in Melbourne to get ideas, to see whether I'm kind of on the right path, and I guess to get some inspiration as well around, just new ideas, new ways of thinking.
It's come up in some of my conversations exactly what you've said. It can be quite hard to find exactly what you need when you need it that is relevant to our industry. And we put ourselves off a little bit because there's not going to be a lot that's really nuanced to private practice scene. But a lot of small business advice is really good general business advice and can be really, really helpful. Do you have any favourite books or favourite podcasts?
I actually wrote them down. There's the KPI book, which is something that I know you encouraged me to have a look at, which is the Key Person of Influence. That had some really interesting stuff in there around, I guess, productizing our services in a service-based industry. How do you productize things? So that was a really good one. And then the video blogs, I find some of the basic bananas marketing blogs good. Some of them, they're a bit hit and miss, but some of them are good and they kind of give some interesting ideas or point you in the direction of books. I actually just got a book now. Can I turn around? Yes. I don't want to make any noise on the sequence.
I've just been crawling along my bookshelves to find The Key Person of Influence by Daniel Priestley.
I just bought this. It's called The 5 Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, Empowering Organisations by Encouraging People. Which I thought was really... Author is Gary Chapman and Paul White. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. I can imagine why you'd have picked it with the word languages in the title.
I always thought, you know, it's one of the things that I always thought I was pretty good at, you know, without kind of blowing my own trumpet too much. But I always thought that I was pretty good at reading people, acknowledging people, absolutely, thanking them for the work they've done, you know, being very grateful for the things that they've contributed. But what's different about this book is that it talks about the 5 different languages of appreciation, meaning that not everyone actually wants to be appreciated in the same way, and that what I perceive as being a great act of appreciation might actually be insulting to some people. So I thought I'd better take a read and see whether I'm doing anything wrong, or whether, yeah, I guess more so getting a bit more of an understanding as to what people, how people want to be appreciated. And some people just want to be thanked. Some people love having half a day off to spend with their kids. Some people like being rewarded by a pay rise. Some people, that doesn't actually matter so much. So it's, yeah, I just thought it sounded interesting. So I picked it up.
It does. It sounds great. Well, I'll be interested to hear what you think of it. I, at the risk of us just lounging back into our usual rambling conversation, I'm just going to share one thing that you might really like.
Yes.
Yeah. I've signed up to an app. It's called Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, and it's a membership. I'm just on the free trial, but I know I'm going to sign up. It gives you the choice of 3 books a day, and it downloads into the app a 15-minute summary of the book.
Oh, wow. It's amazing.
So yeah, it's really, really cool. And the books are amazing. So yesterday I power read The E-Myth again. And what else? Oh, I read a couple of other books that I hadn't sort of come across before, some productivity books around Organize Your Tomorrow Today, that sort of thing. And so in 15 minutes, you just get these chapter summaries and practical, loving it.
Yeah.
I really can't say I've read the book, but I know what the book is about. And for me, that builds a memory of when I need that, I know, hopefully, which book to go to. I should be able to find it back through the app.
Yeah. Brilliant. All right, I'm going to take a look at it.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. Do you have a favourite podcast?
I don't have a favourite. I think I tend to be quite spontaneous with them. On my Facebook profile, I guess, I've signed up to a whole lot of different ones. And so as the videos come through, I kind of connect to their podcast. There's a man in Sydney, I think it is, who is a physio, and he has done a lot of work around private practice, and he does a lot of kind of podcasts and video blogging as well. I can't think of the name, but I can send it to you when I find it, and you can include that as well. He's just quite interesting. He's, again, I guess I feel like I've done this for a long time, so a lot of the things he suggests I feel like I'm already doing, but there are some interesting things in there as well. Again, just a little bit of a shift in perspective that I find often helps as well, just reminds me sometimes.
Yeah. Mm. For a 30-minute listen, to get one or two ideas can be golden. Yeah, to be able to listen and tune in to new and interesting and things you don't know, I guess, is good. Is good. Yeah, I'd love to know who it is. That'll
sound. Yeah, I'll send that through. Yeah.
Cool. I've got a couple of questions that sort of, not set questions, but you probably saw them in the docs that came through. And I'm going to ask you the question about what would you do if $50K landed in your bank account, no questions asked, it was completely and utterly legit and yours. What would you do with $50,000 injection into your business?
I would buy some new equipment for my team. I would allocate a portion of it to marketing, which, you know, you should always do, I guess. But, yeah, I think for me, it's probably about modernising things. Like I'd probably get a few more iPads than what we've got at the moment, and I'd update some of the equipment. And, yeah, possibly just have a look at resources. I feel like, I mean, we're quite real, well resourced at the moment, but there are always things I've got up on the wall here next to me, a wish list which my team put together for me, and they add to it on a weekly basis.
Of course.
And I've got dollar signs next to it saying this item is cheap, this one's moderately expensive, and this one's very expensive. So I'd probably look at getting the things that I know would take a long time to otherwise purchase. So if we're talking about, you know, big assessments or big pieces of equipment, that I know would make a big difference to the way that my team works here. Everything else I'm actually okay with. Other than, you know, it'd be nice to go on a business, I'm doing inverted commas here, a business holiday, a business trip of some sort. But no, I think I'd probably just be looking at equipment.
It's amazing how how much you need. You know, you just need two or three rooms running simultaneously in two or three sites. And you need several sets of A, B, and C. And we work with children and we're busy and things don't always get super, super looked after. They mostly do. But you just need one or two pieces of a toy to go missing and bang, you almost can't use it and you're back for another $30 spend. So
the wear and tear in a clinic is just outrageous. Like we get about, I'd say about 50 kids a day through here and yeah, we have to repaint every year. It's just the walls and the carpets. And I kind of look on with envy when I see an accounting practice in this tiny little shop front with their few offices and everything's pristine and the amount that they would have to invest in, you know, the infrastructure would be so minimal compared to something like ours. And even things like, you know, the amount of balloons we go through and the Crayola textures and the tissues and exactly right. So it's, just those ongoing expenses, I think, are a challenge for any practice. So, yeah, I know I'm not alone in that.
Well, I hope that 50 grand just secretly weasels into your account and you get jazz up the toy cupboards. And I guess the other piece of lovely new resources is the clinicians get really excited and energized by it, almost more so than the little clients. So yes. I wish that for you. The other thing that is happening in this podcast is that the interviewees can ask me a question. And so far I've been able to answer just about all of them. Is there anything that you want to ask me?
Yeah, I probably do have something. How do you find juggling all of your different hats? Because you're doing this, you're doing obviously your touring, you see clients, you're writing books, and seems like you're very present on social media. How do you juggle all of that? How do you fit all that in? And I guess switching between those different jobs.
Thank you for that question. No one's asked me that, and in some ways I don't always know how I do it, and so I don't pause to overanalyze how I get everything done. I've always been very busy, always needed to be creating things. Creating stuff is really important for me, and being creative and having variety is important. And that is balanced somehow. It's a really odd skill set by phenomenal organizational skills. I just got to say, it's like the military sometimes. And particularly in those early days when I had a young family and a young private practice that grew very, very quickly and a husband at the time who was on shift work, you really do need that tribe around you. And yeah, the old time management stuff was really, really relevant. But nowadays it's a little bit different. Our son and daughter are adults and don't even live in the country. So those demands, they're not released, they're just different. And I always say to some of the people I work with that the parenting role and the mothering role doesn't change. It just gets, it doesn't get easier, it just gets different. So we're in a really different spot with that at the moment. But I guess in terms of getting things done, I am pretty good at prioritizing. Don't always get it right, but if I prioritize, and I work with a business coach myself, I'm sure you know that. And you know, I was talking to him about this and he said, when you're stuck, you stop and you close your eyes and you breathe and you think, what is the very next best thing I should do for my business or for this client or whatever? And that has just been gold for when there are lots of open loops in my mind. I think, right, now what is the best thing I need to do now? It's not the thing I want to do. It's the best thing for the overall vision of what I'm setting out to achieve. And I guess really productive because I really enjoy what I do. I mean, today, if I think about it, I've been an OT today and I've been a parent coach today and I've been a business coach today. And later this afternoon, I'm back to being an OT. And then tonight, I'm being an interviewer and I'm going to be a writer. So I just make those roles work and my diary is fanatical and I'm quite firm with locking people into appointments so that I can see where I've got my time, and I block my tasks into the diary as well. That is really kind of gold, that I can see that, you know, from 4 till 6 tonight I've got to do whatever, and I colour code it. I'm an OT, my whole life colour coded. So if I pick up an orange pen, I know that that pen stays on my desk. If I pick up a blue pen, I know that can go in my handbag. It's just fanatical. But wow. I just have to manage myself or it all just ends
up big tangle. Not all OTs are like you, though.
That's probably a very, very good thing. A very good thing. And I guess I just keep reading about that productivity stuff. I listened to that book yesterday and, you know, one of the tips was you organize the next day the night before. And I thought, yeah, I know that. But then I thought, well, maybe not everybody does that. I, you know, my desk is tidy every night. There's one post-it note on it, one journal page on it with what I do the next day. They're in priority order.
Mm.
The documents I need are in priority order so I don't have to hunt for stuff. So that 10 minutes at the end of one day saves me probably 2 hours of faffing around the next day.
So I can right, and I think prioritising, that's, I think, the key, isn't it? You know, just working out. Not doing the stuff that you want to do, but doing the stuff that has to be done. And sometimes it's the hardest.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. So thank you for asking that. I don't know if that was helpful to anyone, but that's how rock and roll. So mindful of the time, I'm sure we've still got a few listeners hanging in there with us. What are you going to be telling me about Sensational Kids in December? What's kind of exciting and on the cards that you're happy to share up for 2017?
Well, we're growing, we're getting bigger. We haven't got another practice, but yeah, things have just gotten really busy and I'm interviewing furiously. So I guess it's probably hard to predict in some ways because it's really interesting. A lot of the ideas and the direction in which we move depends a lot on who we have in the team. So are they new graduates? Are they people with loads of experience? Are they people with really different skills as well? So, you know, do they bring to the business something that we've never actually done before, and is that something that we want to introduce? So kind of nothing, I mean, obviously we're growing our team, we're trying to obviously grow our music therapy program, so that'll be really interesting to see where it goes. I know we'll kind of blink and it'll be December already, but we'll be looking, you know, around and kind of trying to work out whether we have a look at another practice probably into next year. So, again, it depends on how things pan out with our current practices and with, I guess, NDIS as well. So,
yep, for sure. While you were chatting, the irony is and the synchronicity of what just happened is not lost on me. My phone flickered and I glanced, and I'm going to read you the SMS I just got. Entries for the 25th Telstra Business Awards close in 1 week.
Oh!
Benefits include national recognition and acclaim, a comprehensive business health check, and more. Take the first step to submitting an entry. Nominate your business today.
Oh.
So there you are, in case you've got any spare time.
Oh. Between 5 to 12 and midnight, yes.
Yeah. All jokes aside, I'm hearing a little bit about some business owners submitting for local awards. And some of my clients have been winning local awards, council, municipality awards for ages. And that is very, very cool. That's out
there.
That's
very cool. You know what? Like, I think I always have this discussion with my husband, and it's quite usually a very heated exchange, not because we're against each other, but we're both very passionate about it, that there's actually not enough recognition of healthcare services, and there's not enough grants provided to small businesses in the healthcare sector. I think we all do amazing work. I think that there are so many things that we could do with that money as small businesses, and it's just very rarely recognised. There's only just now a few kind of very smallish awards that are starting to kind of appear, but yeah, I think there should be more.
Ooh, maybe we should make some noise to that effect.
Yeah.
Maybe next time to catch up, that could be something we could nut out. Yeah, I agree completely. Completely. Anyway, running a few awards. There's some stuff coming out of that. Yeah.
That would be great. I mean, I know we, as healthcare professionals, we don't do it for the thanks or even the recognition, but it would just be so nice, and it would just make everyone's, I don't know, day a little bit nicer if they just got some kind of recognition for the work that they do, given how tough it can be sometimes. So
absolutely. Yeah. Well, let me peel off a big gold star and staple it stick it onto your hand through Skype. So what a beautiful way to finish. Thank you so much for your time, Fran, and thank you for being so persistent. I promise you, listeners, this has taken 3 weeks and
thank you for being so mind-boggling
logistics, but we've done it.
Thank you
for sharing up your wisdom and your passion and your story. And I look forward to our next chat, whenever that is.
Yes,
and have a lovely, lovely afternoon.
You too. Thanks.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.
Big thanks for investing your time right through to the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. We hope you enjoyed this episode and all the other strong private practice stories in this, our very first season of Private Practice Secrets. If you're keen for some more private practice business info, we sure can help you out. Head on over to the nakerconsulting.com.au website and you'll find all sorts of bits and pieces there. Blogs, forms, web events, freebies, conferences and more. I'll spell that for you, nacre.com.au. Yeah, a weird name with a really, really cool story. While you're on the website, you are warmly invited to book in for a free 30-minute power coaching session. I really look forward to hearing a bit more about you and your business. And yes, you have full permission to pick my brains. Thanks for listening. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, and I'm wishing you and your business a brilliant day.